Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Paul Gauguin Cruises.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. A massive storm system was deadly in several states. In Belvidere, Illinois, at least one person was killed. Dozens were injured when the roof of a concert venue collapsed. Teresa Best was there.
I've gone to so many shows here. I know so many friends who go here all the time. And it's crazy to think that the roof caved in.
A twister in Little Rock, Arkansas as well.
That thing about trains, I never really understood that, but that sound is very much that sound.
Well, where's that storm heading next? Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Warren.
We're going to watch the threat head to the East Coast, parts of the Southeast, parts of the Northeast. We'll have the potential for some very strong storms. Also, widespread winds could cause damage. A similar situation setting up again early next week.
After a grand jury issued an indictment to former President Trump, New York City is stepping up security. This is unprecedented, and CBS's Major Garrett tells us there will be a lot of challenges, even with getting Mr. Trump to the courthouse.
Not only concerns in the immediate term about security for the district attorney, security for the former president, security for all those who go in and out of the courthouse, but long term for the judge, if this goes to trial, for the jurors.
The indictment includes about 30 different counts. Trump called the charges political persecution and has denied any wrongdoing. Both Social Security and Medicare could run out of money within the next decade. Here's CBS's Sarah Ewell Weiss.
The new report shows Social Security would become depleted in 2033. At that time, it could keep paying 77% of current benefits if Congress does not act. The fund for Medicare Part A, which covers hospital stays, will remain solvent until 2031. At that point, the fund would become depleted and be able to pay 89% of total benefits.
The Minneapolis City Council has approved an agreement with the state to revamp policing. Mayor Jacob Frey.
This problem that we now face, it has taken hold over many generations, many administrations, mayors and chiefs. And clearly our black and brown communities have taken the brunt of this.
Students across the country held walkouts yesterday in support of transgender rights. Sarah Youngblood took part.
The constant hatred we get in society is just unacceptable.
It's a party of first-timers for the NCAA championship in women's basketball. Iowa knocked off undefeated defending national champ South Carolina. LSU rallied for a victory over Virginia Tech. The title game for the women goes down tomorrow. Meantime, the men's Final Four is today. Their championship game is Monday. This is CBS News.
CBS News is brought to you by Paul Gauguin Cruises, artfully authentic, all-inclusive year-round cruising to Tahiti and the South Pacific. Visit pgcruises.com to...
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
You're listening to independent programming that has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. To learn more and to see our entire broadcast lineup, go to civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome indeed to the second hour of our broadcast on this beautiful Saturday morning, April 1, in Wisconsin, in the United States of America, on the face of our planet. As always, talking with you, talking about the major stories in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you with us on this second hour of our broadcast this morning, spending most of our first hour talking about the lessons to be pulled from, to be gleaned from what's going on in Israel right now, having to do with its own challenges when it comes to the rule of law, separation of powers, the role of the judiciary, and the attempts by the leadership, the Prime Minister there in particular, to overturn, to undermine the judiciary going forward, the stopping of that by the very populace who plainly responding to what this attempt is all about and saying no. In this hour, yes, we're going to get back to the major story percolating up and out of New York this past week, having to do with the announced indictment of the former President Donald Trump by Alvin Bragg, who's the DA of Manhattan. We're also going to spend some time talking about other issues in this hour related to the implementation of justice in America, announcement about the suit by the Justice Department, a civil lawsuit against Norfolk Southern for the horrific spill in East Palestine. We're going to talk about another major story coming out of a federal judge who has decided that preventive care aspects of Obamacare are unconstitutional. The appeal certainly going forward on that. And then also going to talk about abortion once again, a significant ruling coming out of the state of New Mexico affirming the privacy right to an abortion based upon that state's posturing and its position when it comes to privacy rights and rights to reproductive options in that state. Lots more coming up here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me. Callers always welcome at 844-967-2789. And let's begin with some callers this morning as we get into first this major story about the Trump indictment, other things. Gary, your comment, your question, your thought coming in to us from Sussex.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Jim, for taking my call. I just want to know, and I've talked to you before.
Yes, okay, absolutely. Glad to have you back.
Well, I listen to you. Sometimes I just can't talk because I'm going between my jobs, and
sure.
I just don't have enough time. But I do listen between. I'm just wondering, and this is just when I base my opinion. It's just my opinion. It's not fact. It's how I look at life.
Okay? That's what America's all about. We exercise our right to speak freely, right? Absolutely.
Right. So my point is, I think if for the Democrats, what they should do is this. They should get Biden to go out there and publicly say that this is a witch hunt against my political rival. he would boost his popularity a lot with at least some Republicans, very few, but a lot of independents. But by him keeping his mouth shut, because he knows this is going to bite him in the butt. If they go in, and, which they already did, indicted him, and if they go on with this thing, the Republicans are going to go nuts, and they're going to start going after everybody, his family, his brother, his son, and all sorts of stuff. This is going to open a can of worms like we've never seen before. And in my opinion, before Trump, things were pretty civil. But when Trump was elected president, before he even served a day as the president, which there was a month and a half between the election and, or whatever, 2 months, right, the transition period, they were out to get him the very next day. And to me, it just shows people like myself that this is, like, I hate to use the word witch hunt, but that's what it looks like to me. Okay. Now, right, as of a couple weeks ago,
And Gary, you're breaking up a little bit, having some difficulty hearing you, but let me comment on that. And again, important to understand, we all have views on these kinds of things. Again, plainly, the president and other people have the obligation, I would say, to talk about the integrity of our systems, including the judiciary. And where I would part company with you, again, respectfully, is that for the president or anyone to come out and say that this indictment of the president, which we're going to talk about in just a few moments here, is a witch hunt as a way of accomplishing some political advantage, I don't think that's wise. And I don't think for him politically, more importantly, it is contrary to what's really going on here. What happened here, as we know, and we'll get into the story, Gary, and I appreciate the comment or the question. It's just this, that we have a grand jury. What is a grand jury? They're not witch hunters. They're people who are brought together to review evidence. In this case, a grand jury in Manhattan. They review this for a number of months going on there in Manhattan under the supervision of the court to ensure that there's integrity there. They hear evidence, they review documents, testimony, all those kinds of things. And what they do in the end is determine whether there is probable cause. That's our system of justice in America and in New York as well, to determine whether or not there's probable cause to return charges. Not proof beyond a reasonable doubt at this point. But what happened, of course, what it was announced by Alvin Bragg, the DA, just this past week, is that independent grand jury found probable cause to believe that indeed there's a basis to charge the former president, perhaps others, we don't know, we haven't seen the indictment yet, with crimes under the state of New York's code. That's a process that we can embrace, not a witch hunt, but a process that is premised upon 240 years of history here in our nation. And while I recognize, Gary, again, a good statement about your own opinion on this, we can talk about that process without suggesting that somehow it has been undermined or is the product of politics. It is not. It is not, and has not been. Our system is that this gets tried now. We assume that, as in all situations where a defendant is charged, which Mr. Trump now is, presumption of innocence attends him until that time, if ever, as a trial jury hearing the evidence in public finds beyond a reasonable doubt that these particular offense conduct, as described in this indictment, has in fact been proven by the government. What happened? Let's talk about that, Gary, based upon your invocation of your good question here. The indictment handed out, again, by this grand jury. Important to note at the top, we don't know exactly what it says. Some references in the media to there being 30, 34 particular counts. It stems probably from this investigation being conducted by the grand jury into a payment. It was made to this woman named Stormy Daniels, October 2016, during the final weeks of the presidential campaign at that time, trying to sell her story of an affair with Trump. Daniels' representatives had contacted the National Enquirer, offering exclusive rights to her story. David Pecker, who at that time was the tabloid's publisher, longtime ally of Trump, agreed to look out for potentially damaging stories about Trump during that campaign. One point, apparently even agreed to buy the story of another woman's affair with Trump and never publish it, practice a name called Catch and Kill. Didn't purchase the story. Instead, He and the tabloid's top editor helped broker a separate deal between Mr. Cohen, Michael Cohen, who again, as we all know well, is the president's fixer, so to speak, his lawyer, and Daniel's lawyer. Cohen paid $130,000. Trump later reimbursed him from his own, presumably, the election funds, the campaign funds at the time. Cohen pleaded guilty to charges, including federal campaign finance crimes. The payment, federal prosecutors conclude in that federal case, amounted to an improper donation to Trump's campaign. Federal case, what's happening now in New York is plainly a state incarnation based presumably on the same facts. We don't know exactly, but presumably premised upon the notion that Trump's company somehow falsely accounted for these monthly payments, these payments through Cohen as legal expenses, and that the company records cited a retainer agreement, and that was probably almost certainly false. That is what Cohen has testified for, too, in front of the grand jury and others as well. Importantly, we know in New York, falsifying business records can amount to a crime, albeit usually it's a misdemeanor. And significantly, again, we'll see what happens as it's released this coming Tuesday, to elevate the crime to a felony charge. The prosecutor, Bragg in this case, has to show that Trump's conduct included an intent to defraud, and that included an attempt to commit or conceal a second crime. Lots of things stacked one on top of another. And so we've got a lot to take a look at when it comes to the likely, almost certainly, announcement of this indictment on Tuesday. We know that Tuesday, early afternoon, in the southern tip of Manhattan, the former president will appear in a state courtroom there, and he will be arraigned on whatever these charges are all about. At that time, we will see what this indictment says. We'll see what these 33, 34, 35 charges are all about. Could be some speculation on my part here that it is premised, again, principally upon this catch and kill, this hush money arrangement, but could be other matters as well. We just don't know what the grand jury, which appropriately conducts its business in private, we don't know exactly what its focus has been. We know that there has been a document returned, again, remaining under seal. It is not yet in the public domain. Will be announced at the time of the arraignment, and plainly sometime Tuesday afternoon, we will all see what those charges are all about. Again, charges in a state system, not a federal system, for the offense conduct in the grand jury product, which is that indictment. We know that Mr. Trump then will appear, and the judge presiding over this matter will do things like accept his plea, presumably entered by Mr. Trump and his lawyers, a plea of not guilty. That preserves, obviously, his right to go to trial and to contest, as I said before, the allegations in the indictment. The presumption of innocence stays with him, very important to note, until, once again, there was a finding by a trial jury, not a grand jury, a trial jury, unanimously, beyond a reasonable doubt. We don't know when that will happen. Predictably, probably years down the road. Why? Because in the wake of this arraignment, this announcement of the offense conduct, the specific charges in the indictment, the judge will set deadlines for the filing of motions to dismiss, motions for suppression of evidence, motions about all kinds of things leading up to a trial. He may or may not establish a trial date on Tuesday. Presumably we'll have many, many pretrial conferences and status conferences along the way. And at some point down the road, there will likely be a trial on these charges in Manhattan, prosecuted by Alvin Bragg's prosecutors, by those folks presenting this evidence of the charges in this indictment. Lots more history on this particular case, and plainly others, which we will talk about, not only on this broadcast, but in other times in the days ahead. Stay with us right after this break for more comments from you, and also more commentary about the rule of law in America.
And now, a special message from Charlie Behrens of the Cripes Cast.
How in the heck are you? It's me, Charlie, here to remind you that on April 4th, there's a huge election going on in Wisconsin. It's for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now, it's a divided court, so the winner of this election is going to help determine the future of Wisconsin. Be part of that decision. Go to myvote.wi.gov to figure out your polling location and also what ID to bring. Again, myvote.wi.gov. And watch for deer.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Weather brought to you by Nextech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nextechglass.com. That's nextechglass.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Snow likely this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies. Highs level off around 38, northerly winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. Lows level off around 25. Tonight, clear skies. Daytime highs approaching 53. Tomorrow, cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Thank you for continuing to join me and my producer, Calvin, here at the studios of WAUK Radio. This is a production of Civic Media, as you know. Throughout the state of Wisconsin, we're talking this morning in this particular segment about the other major news story coming out of our nation and our planet, which is the announcement of the Trump indictment by the DA in Manhattan, right before the break, talking about what that might or might not be all about, and focusing in particular upon, again, the rule of law. Why is this important? Because this is the process by which we bring people to justice. This is a criminal proceeding. It's not a civil proceeding. We know well that the former president is facing many other civil charges out there, including this major $250 million civil lawsuit that's being brought by another New York official. Her name is Letitia James. She is the attorney general of the state of New York. Alvin Bragg, the DA of Manhattan, two different people, two different jurisdictions, if you will. Letitia James alleging that the Trump Organization and the Trump individuals, the Trump family members, including the former president and his children, engaged in all sorts of financial conduct, once again, improperly valuing properties, engaging in financial misconduct, all sorts of things related to the management of the Trump books and finances that are contrary, she alleges, to basic New York law. She is seeking not only to prohibit the Trumps from ever once again being involved in any businesses or corporations in New York, but also seeking fines against him, again, about $250 million. That lawsuit, that civil lawsuit, again, proceeding ahead, even as this coming week, Donald Trump, for the first time in his life, is facing criminal charges, again, coming out of this offense conduct before he was elected president, right before his election in 2016, hush money paid through the conduit of his at that time, fixer and lawyer Michael Cohen, to keep women quiet about the affairs that he had. My own view and the view of many people out there is that it's not only a state violation, arguably, we'll see what Alvin Bragg tells us, but also a federal violation of federal election laws. Why? Because you're compromising the capacity of people to know about things that are significant to their vote.
doing so probably in violation of the financial aspects, rules and regulations imposed upon a campaign, using monies in that case again to engage not only in this particular hush money approach, but also to do it in a way that is contrary to our public visibility about monies in that type of setting. And so lots of people out there believing once again that the federal government should have also charged this, but it did not happen. And plainly going ahead this coming week with the state charges premised upon the same factual predicates. We've got Dick calling in from Madison. Dick, thanks again for calling in this morning. Always glad to have your thoughts or your perspectives.
I saw a poll earlier this week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, that said that 57% of people believe Trump, if indicted, should not be able to run again. That said, I don't understand the party that here's the guy's resume. I mean, he's up against this hush money thing, the situation with Georgia, the mishandling of documents, we don't know about that yet, impeached twice, lost a popular vote twice, the January insurrection, lost the House, lost the Senate, and potentially many more legal cases. Why would you want him, under any circumstance, to be the guy that carries the torch for your party? I don't get it.
Right, right. And a rhetorical question, certainly, Dick, but a good one, right, to ask anybody in the political realm, why is this your standard bearer? Why is this a person who you believe should be elected to the position of the most powerful person on the face of the planet, in charge of the executive branch, in charge of our nation in many ways, big and small? As you indicated, well over half the people in America think he should not be able to run again. I'm going to seize upon that particular observation as well and say, you know what, as you appreciate, Dick, and others do, under the Constitution, the way that James Madison wrote it, there are basically three qualifications. You have to have lived in our country for a while. You have to be naturally born here, and you have to be more than 35 years old. Well, it turns out that Donald Trump qualifies on all three of those grounds. No other rules and regulations in our Constitution, so he can run. And he is running, as we know. Nothing to prevent him from continuing to run, even as he is under these federal charges. Dick, you did a great job of summarizing all the other things out there. Civil cases, criminal cases, federal cases, state cases, all kinds of things. We didn't even talk about the E. Jean Carroll matter. All sorts of other things that are out there facing him and putting him in peril. But also sending, Dick, to your larger issue, this message that this is not the kind of person who should be in the presidency. It is, as I've said in the past, from my perspective, an embarrassment historically that our nation, in the times in which we live right now, sent this man to the White House initially. As you indicated, did not win either popular vote, but enough electoral votes in 2016 to capture the White House legitimately and lawfully. Followed that up by engaging in obstruction of justice during the course of his first months. Concluded his term by attempting to mount an insurrection, overturning the results of that. Brings these documents even upon his departure from the White House. Brings those to Mar-a-Lago. Probably crimes there, certainly improprieties in management of those documents, all kinds of things out there. And Dick, once again, your advocacy, regardless of politics, regardless of what one thinks about the policies that he may or may not bring to that position, why is it that this is the kind of person, given the other folks who are out there who could be in positions on both sides of the political aisle, Republicans, Democrats, independents, members of other parties, why is this the person? Why is this the person who should and may well be, even as he's under indictment? It may well be that in the coming calendar year, the next 18 months or so, he could well be the nominee of the Republican Party once again to face presumably Joe Biden in the Democratic side of things for the presidency in 2024. Stunning, stunning development. And the underlining of that this week, that for the first time in history, we now have a president who is going to be under criminal charges. We're going to talk about a collateral aspect of that right after the break and take more callers here on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for all of that discussion and more.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Severe weather across the South and Midwest. CBS's Jennifer Kuiper with details.
Storms leave a path of destruction through several states, especially hard hit Little Rock and Wynn, Arkansas. In Belvidere, Illinois, 70 miles northwest of Chicago, part of a theater building collapsed as a concert was taking place.
At least 50 tornadoes were reported, 6 confirmed storm-related deaths. CBS's Stephen Portnoy with the latest on former President Trump's indictment.
Donald Trump is due to appear Tuesday afternoon in court for his arraignment. As a Secret Service protectee who will be surrounded by federal agents, he is not expected to be handcuffed.
A court ruled that insurers no longer have to pay for some preventative medical services that were provided under the Affordable Care Act. CBS's Robert Legarry says the Biden administration's appealing.
In announcing the appeal, a Justice Department spokesperson said for over a decade, the Affordable Care Act has ensured millions of Americans have access to critical preventative care.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
Every family has one. The Smother.
Holy why!
Hi, Erica.
This is my daughter. I baked her in my tummy.
The Goldbergs every weeknight.
Weeknights at 5 and 5:30 on My24.
With a house full of women, it's every man for himself.
What is it about hanging bras in the bathroom like Christmas ornaments? If I don't hang my underwear in the bathroom, that would be terrifying.
Tim Allen is the last man standing.
Weeknights at 6 and 6:30 on My24.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Hey, Wisconsin, voting is one of our fundamental rights. Every eligible citizen has the right to be heard. You need an acceptable photo ID to vote in the spring election on April 4th. Vote Riders provides free help to get your Wisconsin ID card. Please visit voteriders.org today. They can answer all your questions about voter ID and offer free help if you need an ID to vote. If you're a citizen and you need an ID, visit voteriders.org. Voteriders.org.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With the I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you.
We are back for the final segments in this half hour of Morning Cannolis, and talking right now about what is undeniably the biggest news story coming out of New York this past week, and that is the indictment of the former president, Donald Trump, his arraignment scheduled for early afternoon this coming Tuesday, at which time we will find out more about what the indictment itself says. This reporting that there may be as many as 30 counts, maybe focusing entirely upon particular things, particular events, particular entries, checks, transactions, as a result of this hush money discovery and investigation, but could be other matters as well. So we'll wait and see what that is all about and how it is that the grand jury, again, this independent court-related body has codified, if you will, again, with the supervision and oversight of the DA, what it is that Donald Trump allegedly did in New York in connection with the violation of state law there. We also know, as a result of until very recently, the anticipated indictment, now we know the real indictment, that members of Congress, three in particular, some chairs of committees, have requested the Manhattan DA share with them all the information that the Manhattan DA has about this investigation, about the prosecution of Donald Trump. An outrageous request. They know it well. They know it's contrary to the rule of law. They know it's contrary to basic understanding of civics. We've got a federal legislative leaders, three of them in particular, asking a state prosecutor for discovery. Unprecedented, once again, in our history, will not happen, does not happen, arguably violative of the state law, if indeed the DA were to disclose that to the leadership of the Congress. But what is this story all about? We know, well, that Jim Jordan, who is the House Judiciary Chair, Oversight Chair James Comer, and Administrative Chair Brian Steele from right here in Wisconsin, had made this request to the DA, plainly for political purposes, to address their base, demanding to know what this investigation is all about, information about the charges against the former president, obviously. A lot of that going to be produced to the defendant's attorneys in the concept of what's called discovery post-arraignment. That will happen in the days and weeks and months ahead. But inappropriate for the congressmen, the chairs of these committees, to make their request. And sure enough, Alvin Bragg this week, just yesterday, sent back a missive to the three of them, telling them how wrong they are, how basically unfounded their allegation is, and plainly drawing a red line. He says, what neither Mr. Trump nor Congress may do is interfere with the ordinary course of proceedings in New York State. Exactly right. He goes on to say he accuses the trio of improper and dangerous usurpation. An attempted interference with an ongoing state criminal investigation, warns them against unlawful political interference. He says this: the committee's attempted interference with an ongoing state criminal investigation and now prosecution is unprecedented, and it is an illegitimate incursion on New York's sovereign interests. He's absolutely right about that. Moreover, and he's directing this again to Comer and Steele and Jordan, your examination of the facts of a single criminal investigation for the purpose of determining whether any charge against Mr. Trump are warranted is, and here we go, is an improper and dangerous usurpation of the executive and judicial functions, and lets them have it in this letter. Even worse, he says, based on your reportedly close collaboration with Mr. Trump in attacking this office, he means his own office, the DA in Manhattan, and the grand jury process. Again, we've talked about it this morning and in other settings. It appears, he says, that you are acting more like criminal defense counsel, trying to gather evidence for a client than a legislative body seeking to achieve a legitimate legislative objective. Alvin Bragg more than pushing back on these three chairs of House committees, telling them they're wrong, civically uninformed. Maybe they do know. They do know how inappropriate this is, but doing this just for the purpose of sending messages and presuming that their constituents do not know. And that is perhaps the most offensive part of this at all, is that it's plainly premised, the requests themselves, premised upon the notion that we don't understand how this works, and that based upon that, we're simply making this political move in an attempt to bring up our own posture, our own position within our base, contemptible behavior. Alan Bragg having none of it this past week. Catherine is on the phone, calling in from Madison. Catherine, glad to have you with us this morning on Morning Cannolis.
Hi, James. Thank you very much for your show. I was calling because I wish you could just fill me in on what a typical time frame is on indictments like
sure.
this. I'm pretty much unaware of it. And I'll just take your answer offline. So
great.
Thank you.
Catherine, thanks so much for the call. It is a great question. And like all lawyers, I will tell you it depends somewhat upon what the judge does. Both in the federal system and the New York system, there are things called speedy trial obligations. That is this notion that, justice delayed is justice denied. Especially applicable in the criminal setting, where you want to make certain that frankly, for the state, for the people who have an interest in prosecutions, no less important, arguably more important for the defendant himself, herself, itself. You want to make certain that, again, under our Constitution, even the Constitution of the state of New York, that their rights are not trampled upon, that they're enforced. And that's the right to a speedy trial. So what happens is that on Tuesday, again, the former president will be arraigned. He'll plead presumably not guilty to the charges. And as I said before, the judge will set up a timeline. He can solicit from the attorneys for the prosecutors, the attorneys from the defendant, recommendations about how this should be done. Presumably months out, there will be the exchange of discovery. There will be allegations, of course, made along the way, maybe simply position statements at this point, not allegations yet, about discovery. And the posture, arguably, from the defense is going to be this is very complex, going to require lots and lots and lots and lots of time. The judge probably will be hearing from the prosecutors as well and will say, you know what, judge, if this is narrow to the hush money event, that yes, there are a lot of documents. Yes, there are a lot of transactions. Yes, there are a lot of witness statements to look through, but it's not the most complex case that we have ever seen in America. And for that reason, set these proceedings out for some period of time to give the defendants an adequate time to review all that discovery, to get a sense of what the information is. There's an obligation under what's called Brady in the federal system, generally under the state system as well, to disclose to the defense all of the information that is had. And that's where some of the allegations can come in. If the prosecutors, if the government doesn't do that, there could be allegations, motions filed to compel the production, to find that there were not disclosures of everything. That happens with some frequency. Likely that this judge will set a timetable again for the conduct of the disclosure of all of that discovery and motions once again. Almost certainly be a motion to dismiss this prosecution, to dismiss the case, probably based upon some legal issues, maybe some factual issues as well. That is done on paper. The judge could have oral argument on that again as well. Could other issues. Maybe there's some suppression motions that need to be filed about the evidence that's going to be presented as part of that discovery. All kinds of things can happen. All of that in the pretrial setting. And likely he will set a trial date. Maybe on Tuesday, maybe at some point in the near future. My own estimate is that because of the high visibility nature of this, that trial date unlikely to be in this calendar year, maybe not even the next calendar year. He may set it and it may be postponed multiple times. We have seen that happen. And again, in all those circumstances, the judge has to make a finding that it is in the interest of the defense, interest of the people, that the speedy trial obligations be extended, that the limitations on the postponements on that can in fact be suspended somewhat, but it's got to make findings about the interests of justice to do that. And so all of that depends upon the particular statements made by the parties, the complexity of this particular matter, the discovery produced, the motions and the hearings on those that are coming up. This is going to consume at least, from my estimate, 2, if not more years before we see a jury that is selected. Lots of issues to be raised there about the impaneling of a jury. In America, in Manhattan, I think it can be done. People can decide cases based upon what they see in trial and not based upon what has been presented in the media. Great question. We'll be answering that in greater detail as this case plays out in the days and weeks and months and, yes, probably years ahead as well. Gene, calling in from Eau Claire. Glad to have you with us once again on this high news morning. Thanks, Gene.
I'm calling. I have comments on everything, but I'm just calling today to thank you so much from all of us who have been paying very close attention and explaining things for us and taking your time to educate us on all of these areas plus what we can do. So I just wanted to call and say thank you. Your show is invaluable. It is a wonderful show, and you're hitting all of the things that we all are caring about every single day. So thanks again, James. That's all I want to say. Thank you so much. We really greatly appreciate you. And you have a good weekend. Thank
Gene,
you.
Thanks so much for the call. I am flattered by that. And I like to think that hopefully we're doing some education here. I do it because of people like you, Gene, and other callers this morning, all thoughtful people who are engaged in America, engaged in these issues, reading the news and consuming the news and understanding it. It is my own background, obviously, as a former criminal prosecutor, a civil litigator. I still continue to do an awful lot of civil litigation to this day, a lot of speaking.
speaking, a lot of teaching, a lot of presenting on these issues on a regular basis. I am honored, not only by your wonderful comments, Gene, this morning, but by this opportunity to spend some time on air doing what I can do based upon my background, my experience, to educate and to talk about these all important issues. We also have another caller, so we appreciate very much those kinds of comments. Thank you so much. I am flattered, and I thank you for that very, very positive comment. We also have another caller on the line right now. Mark, why don't you go ahead with your comment, your question? Glad to have you with us also, Mark. And Mark, if you are there, you're calling in, I think, from Sussex, and glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yep, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
It's funny because I'm going to preface this by saying that I was a Trump fan, and I'm not a Trump fan anymore. But all of the BS that the Democrats have pulled against him, all of these fabricated, all of these conspiracy theories, it's just amazing. And again, I do not want him to be the Republican nominee. But again, has he been convicted of anything? Absolutely not. Does Joe Biden come out there and fabricate stuff every single day? Every single day I hear something new coming out of his mouth that is just a complete lie. But you'd never comment on that. Again, I want to say that I'm not a Trump fan any longer. But all of these conspiracy and all this crap, this is really bad for the United States, what happened this week.
And Mark, I appreciate the comment, as always. That's why we take callers from all sides of the political aisle. Glad to have you with me this morning. Needless to say, I disagree with you, and that's a part of America, too. I don't think that our discussion on these morning broadcasts is jaded. What I try to do is present the facts that are known, try to indicate that, again, reasonable people can interpret them differently, but the descriptions are always not fabricated. And I disagree with you, with due respect, that the things that our current president says are all lies and are all products of conspiracies. But we appreciate the comment, and that's what this broadcast and about America is generally. That's the First Amendment. That's what James Madison said we can do. And going forward, we will continue to take your calls and take those observations of others on all sides of the political aisle. I promised in this morning's broadcast, we talk about a few other issues. Again, anticipating more on the prosecution of Donald Trump down the road. Let's talk about a few of those other issues as we continue our discussion this morning. We know about the tremendously horrific environmental damage caused by a train derailment on the Ohio-Pennsylvania border a number of weeks back, spilling these hazardous chemicals into nearby creeks and rivers near East Palestine. We know about that, a huge event, and the company Norfolk Southern causing that, doing some things right now with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and its own entities to try to accomplish the cleanup. And all those, again, a continuing focus of all of us in America, not just in that particular part of our nation. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what the U.S. Department of Justice is doing in response to that, also a part of the enforcement of the rule of law under the Clean Water Act, which we've talked about a lot. The Clean Water Act, important to the enforcement of our integrity. And come back, stay with us for that presentation, that discussion, and why it's important going ahead right here on our morning broadcast.
On Tuesday, April 4th, we have a chance to elect people who will do the right thing for Wisconsin and for Waukesha. We need experienced leaders we can trust. Vote for Janet Protasiewicz for Supreme Court, Fred Stram for Waukesha County Circuit Court, and Diane Voigt for Waukesha School Board. Janet, Fred, Diane. Because we can trust them. Vote on April 4th. Your vote and your voice matter.
Paid for by Blue Sky Waukesha.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Weather brought to you by Nextech Glass, your hometown experts for auto, residential, and commercial glass repair and replacement. Please visit nextechglass.com. That's nextechglass.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 38 this afternoon under overcast skies. Northerly winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 25 tonight. Clear skies, mainly cloudy tomorrow, 53. Upper 50s Monday with a chance for scattered showers. Turning cooler Tuesday with highs in the low 50s and storms. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
This is our final segment this morning on Saturday, April 1 of Morning Cannolis. Before the break, talking about what the Department of Justice is now doing in connection with the horrific environmental damage caused by Norfolk Southern and its train derailment of a number of weeks ago in East Palestine. Just this past week, the Attorney General Merrick Garland announcing that it is seeking to hold the company accountable for what he describes as unlawfully polluting the nation's waterways and to ensure it pays the full cost of the environmental cleanup. A civil lawsuit brought by the Environmental Natural Resources Division of Maine Justice, and again, an attempt to collect the fines, the costs of the cleanup, holding Norfolk Southern responsible for past and future costs in connection with that horrific event. Why is that important? Well, it's under the Clean Water Act. We know the Clean Water Act is also the subject of review right now by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case that we've talked a lot about, a case involving Sackett. That's the name of the case pending right now before the Supreme Court. More importantly, it underscores once again what good government does when it comes to enforcing the laws, the environmental laws, but ensuring that integrity is followed not only in the cleanup itself, but also in the financial parts of this. This is going to be plainly a huge, huge cost imposed to clean up this environmental damage caused by this railroad disaster there in East Palestine. The Department of Justice, appropriately, rule of law, justice, government in action, suing the Norfolk Southern train company this past week to ensure that justice is done when it comes to that. I'm going to talk about one other important case also coming out of our federal courts just this past week, and that is that a federal judge in Texas who previously had addressed the legitimacy of the Affordable Care Act issued just this past week a very far-reaching ruling just on Thursday that prevents the Biden administration from enforcing a provision of the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act, sometimes called Obamacare, that provides patients with certain types of free preventive care. And that's the key. Prevention, again, a major portion of the Affordable Care Act for 10 years in place. And that includes screenings for cancer and depression, diabetes, and HIV. The judge, his name is Reed O'Connor, Federal District Court, Northern District of Texas. The injunction, if you will, applies nationwide. And if it stands, again, the Department of Justice has already indicated it's going to appeal that ruling. Could have some very far-reaching implications for millions of Americans out there, bringing the nation, again, back to the states, from my perspective, back to the days, rather, when before the 2010 law, when insurers were free to decide which preventive services they would cover. Now, even though the injunction takes effect immediately, the review from most insurers is
that this decision would not have any immediate impact upon people's coverage, making clear that Americans should have some peace of mind that there'll be no immediate disruption, care, or coverage. Still, there could be some significant changes over time. And the fact that we've got a federal judge out there declaring this portion of the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional is very significant. Again, focusing on the preventive aspects of it, the decision undeniably introduces uncertainty into the future of this portion of our healthcare system, again, upon which people have relied to access preventive care with no out-of-pocket costs for many, many years. And beyond that, it underscores once again the importance of good legislation, which we have had, and the role that our courts play in interpreting this. Now, undeniably, as I said, the Department of Justice is going to be appealing this order. It does not, as an important aspect, doesn't, like some of the previous challenges, undermine completely the entire structure of the Affordable Care Act, but certainly places a challenge in the wake of this decision to the provision of preventive options and preventive care going forward. And so even though this was not particularly a surprise coming from this judge, he had previously ruled that some portions of the Affordable Care Act are violated the Constitution, still comes, as we all know, a week after the 13th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, the signing of it by President Obama in 2012, and so it's significant not only in timing, but also in terms of the future of that. We'll look forward to hearing more about the appeal of that very major decision down the road, and also talking about the role of the federal judiciary in deciding these major issues that have tremendous impacts upon the healthcare and other aspects of our lives in America. We have a couple more callers in our last minutes. We're going to take those callers on this Saturday, April 1. First, Tom calling in from West Dallas. Tom, your comment or question on this good Saturday morning.
Thank you. Thank you for your show. I look forward to this every Saturday morning.
Great, Tom. Thanks so much.
My question is for the last topic. If it's going to take a year or two for this case to get through the courts for Trump, what about him running? And God forbid that he would get elected again and this case isn't done. What does he then get executive privilege again, or how does that work?
All right, Tom, you have pointed your finger, I think, at one of the major questions and concerns that is out there. I'm going to spend a little time talking about that. And I'm taking a note here also, Tom, because that's the kind of thing that, especially after we hear the schedule next week, I'm going to revisit next week as well. But the short answer here on this Saturday morning is just this. Your point is so well taken. It is going to take a very long time for this case to go to trial. Understand also that even assuming that there is a conviction sometime in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, I don't know, far down the road, likely an appeal to the appeals court as well, could ultimately go to the Supreme Court. So it would be a long period of time. During that period of time, Tom, your very good question, is there any prohibition on him or anyone else running for elective office? The answer is no. Under the Constitution, just these three obligations, including residency and natural born citizenship and the age of 35, he can continue to run for office, the highest office in our land, even while in New York and arguably our other places, could be in Georgia, could be in Washington, D.C., if there are federal charges at some point. All of that can take place while he is at the same time running for the presidency. Going to be a fascinating time in this year and in next year, especially 2024. Highly unlikely this is going to be resolved anytime. And going back and forth, if you will, from the campaign trail and the interconnection between that and a major political candidate running for office, the importance of that, the significance of that, the unprecedented nature of that, Tom, cannot be overstated. Nothing prohibiting him from doing it. I'll leave you with even this additional thought.
if he is convicted, there's actually nothing in the Constitution that prevents him from even taking office. There is the 14th Amendment that talks about insurrectionist behavior. We will talk about that more in the future, but the Constitution doesn't talk about this. Why? Because once again, Tom, we are going down an unprecedented path. Thanks so much for that call. Thank all of my callers this morning for their wonderfully insightful and engaging questions and comments. We'll take more of that next week here on Morning Cannolis. Join us for next week's engagement on issues of law, government, and that all-important aspiration for justice in these United States of America. Thank you, everybody. Have a good week.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Stories come to life at your local parks and forests. They're places of wonder, and they're closer than you think. Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.